glad you're here tonight. Glad you're here. Whether it's your first time here or you've been a part of the journey of Elements so far and where we're heading and where God's got us. Tonight, we started off with some rhythmic sense because we start this new series called Rhythms, which is really looking at maybe circling around some key values that we're kind of building, propping up this journey called Element City Church and this adventure that we have us on, and also these circling around some key values that I think, friends, just really honestly, are to be part of the values that become a rhythm in our life. Not just things we talk about or things we look at or things we say, okay, that's nice verbiage and it's nice words and I'm able to recite that, but actually they make their way into part of our DNA as followers of Jesus. And you may be here tonight and maybe you came with a guest, or you came with a friend, and you're kind of like, well, okay, I'm just investigating this whole spiritual thing, and I'm really just here for my friend. And I think it's awesome that you're here, because I think it's super cool that you would own part of your spiritual journey. And I want to invite you to kind of hear some things tonight about this rhythms of how we're to live. And this is really a message kind of geared at those who follow Jesus, but if you're here, you got to get kind of eavesdrop in on that and a little family chat that we'll have tonight and just this adventure that we're on. And so you get a great night to be here. And so I want to talk about this first night, about this notion of living as a builder. That doesn't mean like the builder generation. That just means living as a builder, as a person. Who of you you've created something? Like some of you, like you like to work with your hands and tools and all that kind of stuff, and you created, like you built a table at home. This is not me. I've not done this. But maybe some of you like to create and build different things. Maybe you're into crafts, or maybe you're an artist and you like to create music or create paintings or whatever. How many of you have created something that you'd say, yeah, I created that, and that was, you know, I got to be a part of that? How many of you, like maybe most of us, grew up with some great building materials called Legos? Anyone? How many of you, I put a survey on YouVersion, you can follow on your notes or so. How many of you would say, yes, I'm a builder with Legos? Some of you would say, no, I'm not. How many of you would label yourself, yes, I'm a Lego maniac? Okay, a few of you. Now, the interesting thing about Legos is that, you know, you have a bunch of different stuff, and the pieces are movable and things like this. Here's what I want you to do. Turn to your neighborhood, which is 2-3 people right around you, and I want you to tell them one of the creations you made with Legos growing up, okay? And if you didn't make anything with Legos, just say, hey, Legos are evil. But just whatever, okay? So you got 10 seconds. Turn to 2 people right around you. What was a creation that you made with Legos? All right, now, how many of you built a city with Legos? Like, you were that intense, you actually built. I have friends that literally, their entire pool table is like every month a new creation that their whole family builds together. I think that's personal torture, but they love it as a whole family, and power to them. I built like the X-Wing fighter. Anyone ever done that before? That was pretty sweet, and I accomplished that, and I felt like, hey, I've done something in life, and I can pass on now. But, you know, it's just this notion with Legos, it's so fun to create, and sometimes you create and you follow the systems and the pictures that are there. Sometimes you just get wacky and create different stuff, and that's a lot of fun too. Now, I was reading about Legos this week, because that's fun to do, and in Legos, you realize these are great building materials, but do you realize they wear down? In fact, according to Lego, after 37,112 times of connecting, these will no longer connect. They wear down, they wear out. And my thought when I read that was, wow, who is the poor soul that works at the Lego factory that said, hey, Johnny, it's your turn. You've got to figure out how many times these can be connected and then they don't work anymore. And poor Johnny, that would be horrible. 37,112 times. And for some of you who are engineers, yes, the challenge gauntlet has been thrown down. Have fun. Let us know about it on YouTube or something. 37,112 times. They break down. They wear out. It's something that you build with, and yet it breaks down. How many of you have driven around our city? And you see things that were built that were majestic and had a lot of work done to them, right? And then over time, what happens? They wear down. They wear out, right? How many of you have had to paint the inside walls of your house or your apartment, right? And you're thinking, I don't touch those walls. I haven't done anything to those walls. I barely hang anything on those walls. How come it needs repainted? Does anyone else have these thoughts like I do? Just wear and tear, just normal things that we build have a way of breaking down and wearing out along the way, don't they? And I want you to kind of keep that in mind, that tension of wearing out and breaking down, and this value of still building, this value of living a life of building. And I want you to hold that tension in your hands and in your mind tonight. And I want us to go to Matthew chapter 16. We're going to look at Matthew 16, and we're going to look at Matthew 28, because I want to look at what Jesus has to say in these passages and these words to his early followers, because he speaks of this building, and he speaks of something that doesn't wear down, doesn't break down, doesn't wear out, doesn't deteriorate, and just it doesn't have an end to it. And for people who live in a world that we build stuff and it wears down and wears out, that's an interesting thought to be thinking about, this notion. And you have to understand that Jesus is probably the most significant figure in history. Whether you follow him or not, or whether you buy the whole fact that he is the Son of God, or he claims to be, or wherever you are in your spiritual journey, you cannot get around the fact that this figure, that Jesus stands alone as the single most significant shaping character of human history. Think about the scope of his influence for a guy that taught for 3 years. Not in a public education system, didn't write a single book. But think about the scope and the impact and the influence he leveraged that is now 2,000 years later, maybe part of the reason you're sitting here tonight. Think about that. Think about the influencers of our day and the impact that they have. And you know that somewhere along the way, there's a shelf life to it, right? But there's something interesting about this guy, Jesus. You cannot get around that fact. And in Matthew chapter 16, he goes on this journey, right, with his early followers. And I want to read this to you. Then I want to kind of break it apart and tear it down here a little bit. And in verse 13, here's what we read. Okay, I'm just going to read through this so you can follow along with on your app or in your Bible. Here we go. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, those disciples again are just his early followers, those who are kind of apprenticing, if you will, following him, right? And he asked his disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? Now, when you read Son of Man, Jesus is always talking about himself, kind of this title that he's given himself. Who do people say I am is what he's asking. Who do people say I am? They replied, some say you're John the Baptist. Others say Elijah. Still others, Jeremiah, or one of the old prophets. So those prophets, those leaders from our past that our grandfathers and our great-grandfathers told us about, you're one of them, like kind of come back or something, okay? So that's what he's hearing. And then he asked this incredible question. What about you, he asked. Who do you say I am? Friends, that question right there is the single most important question when it comes to this guy, Jesus. Who do you say he is? Who do you say he is? Is he just a good teacher? Was he just a miracle worker? Was he a nice guy who taught good moral lessons? How do you get around this influence that this one single guy who never wrote a book and how he's impacted so much of our culture, and that 2,000 years later, we're still actually talking about him? Who do you say he is? And then Simon Peter speaks up, verse 16. He says, Simon Peter answered, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." You are the Christ. You're the Messiah that all the Old Testament is talking about, that one day there would be a deliverer. One day there would be this Messiah, this anointed one who comes in. And Simon says, "You're him. That's who I say you are." And Jesus replied, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by man." You didn't come up with this on your own. "But this was revealed to you by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter." He's changing his name here. You are Peter. You're now stone. You're now rock, Petra. It's this notion of you are this. I'm changing your name here. This just becomes really important. And he goes on, "That you are now Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it." That's a pretty bold statement. Now, some people, some scholars will say, well, that what Jesus is referring to is, well, Peter's name is changed to rock, and Petro, Petra is really what's going here, and rock is Petra, and Petro is this larger rock, and it's fascinating what happens in the very first verse we read. What's the very first verse? In Caesarea Philippi, Jesus has this conversation, right? So we just read what the conversation is. Can I tell you a little bit about where this conversation happens? It's interesting. Sometimes where we have conversations impacts and changes things, doesn't it? That if I'm frustrated with my kids, and I know they just had this, we have this great tension moment, and it's building, and I just have the conversation right then, how well do you think it goes, right? Probably not all that well, and it usually ends in a shouting match, and everyone's upset, right? But if I let things calm down and actually have it in a different setting, don't you think settings are important to conversations? How many of you agree? Yeah. It's interesting, Jesus goes on a walk. He says to his early followers, "Hey, we're gonna go to Caesarea Philippi." What you don't know is in the first century, that'd be like saying, "Hey, we're gonna walk to Las Vegas and we're gonna have a conversation." What? These are good Jewish guys who have like kept themselves from like the infiltration of the world, so to speak. And Jesus says, "No, we're gonna go to Caesarea Philippi. We're going to Vegas." Caesarea Philippi was Vegas before Vegas was Vegas, okay? And what you have to understand that it really it's in the northern part, north of Jerusalem, it's in the northern part of where Jesus traveled. Most of his ministry happened around the Sea of Galilee and the regions right around there, but he actually travels 30 miles, 14 hours walking. Remember, there's no segways, there's no trolleys. This is walking with his disciples to Caesarea Philippi. What's fascinating about where this conversation happens is that there's a giant rock formation that is in Caesarea Philippi that's literally at the kind of where it's a marshland, so to speak, of where the Jordan River begins to start. And on this giant rock formation that's there, the ancients begin to worship a god named Pan, one of the ancient kind of Greek gods. And Pan was said to have been able to travel back and forth between Hades and Earth. And so here they are, standing at the edge of this rock formation of the cliff where this giant temple would have been built to the god Pan. And Jesus strikes up a conversation. "Who do people say I am?" Well, you're Elijah, you're Jeremiah, you're John the Baptist, you're who do you say I am?" And in that moment, Peter says, "You're the Christ. You're the Messiah. You're the Son of the living God. You're the one we've been waiting for." And Jesus says, "Blessed are you, Peter, for you didn't come up on that on your own, but my Father has revealed to you that. And I tell you, on this rock, I will build my ecclesia, my church." First time the word church shows up in Scripture. First time Jesus uses the word church. In Greek, literally, it means ecclesia. What it doesn't mean is a building. Did you hear me? What it doesn't mean is a building. And so often, friends, in the 21st century, when we say the word church, what do we mean? Building. In fact, it's not to the fourth century that the word church gets kind of transformed and latched on to this notion of building. It's a place, a space. It's this building, this structure. And that's the church. And Jesus says, no, on this rock, maybe standing on this incredible formation rock where in the first century people would have said, this is where like heaven, this is where like earth and hell meet, okay? That's what they would have been thinking as they're standing there in the Vegas of Vegas. As they've watched in this temple courts, people doing incredibly defiled things to worship a false god, Pan. I won't even tell you some of the things that they would do to worship, so to speak. But it wasn't singing, friends. It was a lot different things. And so they're overlooking all the scenario, and Jesus says, on this rock, I'm going to build a movement. I'm going to build what ecclesia literally means is assembly or called out ones. This movement of people that says, I'm going to build this movement, and this movement will not ever be stopped. In fact, this movement will continue to be built and built and built and built. And yeah, it may have setbacks, and it may even have its own setbacks. It may even thwart itself in ways that condemns it and even takes it ways that are sideways and it hurts people. But I'm telling you, what Jesus is saying in this moment is this movement will never stop. It's not 37,112 times until it's over. It will never be stopped. And it's just when he said, I'm going to build my church, my ecclesia, this movement here, where hell and earth meet and where people are caught in the mess that that creates. Think about it. Think about what it would have been like to be in that moment, to hear from him. To hear these words. Now, what that may stir for you is to realize, man, maybe I've let church become so much less than that. Maybe I treat church like the gym. And I'm a member at my gym, and I go there, and I do my thing, and I leave, and I have no obligation, no connection to it, and I give them my 10 bucks, and they don't care if I show up or not, right? But Jesus is saying, no, this movement of Jesus is so much more than a building. It's so much more. That Jesus is always building his church. Now, here's where it gets super cool. Ready? You're the church. You, as a follower of Jesus, you're the church, which means some incredibly beautiful things for you. You may label yourself a mess. You may find yourself sideways in life, and here's what I'm here to tell you. Jesus is still building in your life. He doesn't quit. He doesn't give up. There isn't 37,112 times, and then he's done with you. He will keep building your life. No one is too far gone, too far lost, too far broken. He is always building his church, and you, friend, are his church. We, as a corporate expression, the localized body called the church, we are part of this movement of Jesus. The central teaching of the church is not about something, but about someone. And it's Jesus standing up in this moment and saying, I will build my church. And the gates of hell and everything that throws against it will not be able to stand or stop it. I will always be building it. It's this notion that the whole gospel comes down to a person, not a philosophy, not a game plan, but a person, the person of Jesus. Now, you may question that, and you may be on your faith journey, and you're going, well, you know, I don't know if I really believe like the whole death, resurrection thing. That's kind of crazy. And I got to tell you, yeah, it seems really far-fetched, doesn't it? But the more I study the gospels and the more, here's what I see. I see Jesus appearing to 500 people. I see Jesus getting these early followers who, at his death, the whole movement hinged on him, right? And all of a sudden, he's gone. And then 3 days later, he's back. And these early leaders go to their death defending the fact about something they not just heard about, but someone they saw. Would you? Would you go to the death for something that was a lie? I wouldn't. Think about James. Can I just read you how James starts his account? You can read this. James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ. That's verse 1, chapter 1 of James. Who's James? He's the brother of Jesus. What would your brother have to do to convince you he's the Messiah? Get it? You know your brother. What would your brother have to do to convince you that he really is the Son of God? Somewhere, James got convinced. And if someone can claim that they're going to die and resurrect and then pull it off, my money's on him. And so for me, that's my personal conviction. That I may not understand everything that Jesus taught. I may have my own questions. I may have my own doubts. But if someone's going to sit and say, hey, I'm going to a cross. I'm going to die. And 3 days later, I'm coming back. And he does it. My money's on him. I'm with him. Because I don't see that. Do you? I don't see that anywhere else. And Jesus says, I'm going to build my church. And no one's death, not even mine, will stop the ecclesia, this movement, this assembly, this gathering of people. And this momentum of that Jesus movement gets expressed in the local church. Does the church have black eyes from its history? Yeah. Has the church done some pretty dumb things throughout history? Yes. Has the church ever stopped being built? No. Why is it still going 2,000 years later? Why did it stand up against the mighty Rome and outlast Rome? This small sect of 150, 200 people that claimed to follow Jesus, this group of people, how did it stick around? It tried to get squashed. Nero burned Christians in his garden so he can walk in it. And yet somewhere along the way, this movement of Jesus just kept going. Why? Because Jesus said, I'm going to build my church. And nothing, not even hell itself, is going to be able to stop it. And 37,112 times and counting, it's still being built. One life at a time. And the localized expression of that, the powerful movements run on momentum, right? And it takes resource to do that. So here's what I want to do. I want to give you an update of where we are. So if you're a guest with us, you're going to hear a little bit of a family chat. Okay? And you get to eavesdrop in on it, and we're totally cool. We don't hide anything. And we want you to kind of hear it. But as one of your leaders, I want to give you kind of a family chat of where we are, okay? Because I want to show you some great things that God is doing, and I want to call us to something greater, friends. This notion that this movement called Element City Church is part of that movement of Jesus that Jesus is still building, and that we get to be a part of it, friends. And I want to call us to something greater. Here's some amazing, amazing things. Now, I know we've been looking for a building, right? That's not a shocker to anybody. We've been looking because we feel like God is calling us to move toward Midtown, to the heart of our city. And we've been looking, and it's been really tough. I got to be honest. Here's what I'm learning. I'll be brutally honest with you. I have never done anything harder than this in my entire life. I can't tell you how challenging and how often I feel like a failure at times. And then God does some incredible things to come alongside and says, you know what? I'm still building. I'm still building. Here's the biggest lesson I've learned in the last 9 months. The church is a movement, not a building. And for people who don't have a building, that is a powerful, amazing thing. And I'm being reminded of that. Why? Because when churches get stuck in seeing a church as a building, they turn inward. And they stop the movement that's supposed to be going outward. And for me, that's the biggest lesson I'm learning. That I want us to be a church that never, ever, ever turns inward. That we don't ever become a fortress. That we are a movement. And we are on the offense, not the defense. And we are moving the movement of Jesus forward one life at a time. And we will do that with sacrifice, and we will do that with just reckless abandon, and we will do that with wisdom, and we will do that with faithfulness, and we will do that, and we will get it wrong at times. We'll trip up, but we will get back up, and we will keep moving it forward. Here's the challenge for us. Over the last 6 months, okay, and I'm going to talk about finances a little bit, and because you need to hear it, and because we don't ever talk about it a whole lot. Over the last 6 months, we average about $14,817 in a month, okay? We have 2.5 staff here, which is 4 people. So we have basically two full-time and some part-time positions to kind of help pull off everything that we do and where we're going and all that kind of stuff. That takes about $11,200 a month, okay? Which means you've got a little bit of playroom in there. We live at home right now, okay? We actually affectionately refer to Pantano as Mom's Basement. We're in Mom's Basement. How many of you lived at home? There's some great perks living at home in there. I don't know if you knew, but living at home, there's like this cabinet fairy that when you open the cabinets, there's like stuff there to eat. It's amazing. When you go to the refrigerator, there's like this refrigerator elf that just stocks it every night. How many of you remember those days living at home and you're like, man, this is a sweet gig living at home, right? How many of you moved out on your own? Raise your hand real high. You moved out on your own. And then what happened? You're like, where'd the fairy go? Where's the refrigerator elf? Right? And suddenly you're paying this like water? What? I gotta pay for water? I gotta pay these people like to live here type thing? And so like you have these added reality hits you, right? And in that moment, you're gonna realize something and you gotta take ownership of something. Here's the incredible opportunity we have, friends. We have the opportunity to own the mission of Jesus Christ and to move it forward one life at a time. And we get to do that for a city that desperately needs this movement of Jesus' hope and love. And we get to do it. We're actually already on the team. By being here, you're on the team. And we get to be a part of that. And here's my invitation to you. That's going to take some ownership. There's no fairies, there's no elves. The movement and the momentum of the movement of Jesus happens, and it's resourced by people. It's resourced in how we give, it's resourced in how we serve, it's resourced in how we help one another and how we love one another, how we use our talents and use our gifts in all those kind of ways. It's not just financial. Don't hear that. But here's the amazing thing. 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I wake up in the morning, I'm at the office. We have an office now. Can you believe that? Like, we have a headquarters. Like, we didn't have that 6 weeks ago. And we have it, and we're paying pennies on the dollar to be in this place. Like, if I told you how much we're paying, it's redonkulous what we're paying to be in this place. It's ridiculous. And God provided that out of the blue. And we're there. And we have 3 e-groups that meet out of there every week. We have one that's starting this Tuesday for ladies. We had one Thursday and we have one Monday nights that meet there. We didn't have that 7 weeks ago, but it showed up out of the blue. So here's what we're praying for, a building to show up out of the blue. And we're actually, I'm gonna call this, we're moving to space, people. We're not moving to a building because the movement of Jesus is a movement and it's gonna be taking space for us to gather, and so we're moving to space. We're not moving to a building. It will be in a building, but I want us to be thinking about it as a movement, okay? Moving out on our own, we got to take ownership. Here's some amazing gifts that God's given us. Through the partnership with Costas and Pantano, we've got probably about $100,000 sitting in the bank right now. And I'm telling you that, I'm not hiding anything, because I want you to know God's blessed us. That didn't come from any of us. That came strictly from people who believe in the movement of Jesus that is Element City Church, who don't go here, who say, we believe in you and we believe in the calling God has you on the path, and we're willing to sacrifice for that. Friends, that's like a boost. Can you believe that? That's amazing. I had someone call me 3 weeks ago and says, would you come by the house tonight? And we're talking and having a conversation, and they slide a check across the table, and it's for $10,000. And they say, we believe in Element City Church, and we will never set foot in there because we're too far away and we're too old. But we believe... We believe in the difference you will make in this city. Go do it. That is amazing. I remember driving home with tears in my eyes, just going, God, what are you doing? I don't know how to say thank you enough for that. But friends, that's a boost. And listen, that is all that is. It's a boost. And when you moved out on your own, you got a boost. You got a boost from your parents. You got a boost from your friends. But you had to own it, right, from then on. And the boost only lasts so long, doesn't it? And so here's the challenge I'm going to give to you. Three things. Pray, prioritize, and think percentage. Here's what I'm going to ask you to do. Pray about what God would have you give, okay? Prioritize your giving to Element City Church. It's not an afterthought. Think about it. For some of you, you've never given to a church organization, and I get it. I get it. But I'm telling you, the momentum of the movement of Jesus doesn't fund itself. It just doesn't. And think percentage. Think about what percentage you like to say, hey, I want to sacrifice and give that. And you can give online or you can give in the boxes by the doors. But I'm going to call you to that, to think about this. This is what we say in our starting point class. We had 8 people go through that just a few hours ago. And I told you the same thing there. But we've never said that in front of everybody. And so, ta-da, there it is. We're saying it. And I'm calling you to it. As one of your leaders, we need you. And we need us to move the ball down the field for the kingdom's sake. This movement of Jesus is what we're on. God is fueling it all around us without even our help yet. But friends, we've got to own it now. We've got to take that step, and we've got to own it. And we will use those with wisdom, and we will use them wisely to move the movement of Jesus forward, one life at a time. What's fascinating is you look at the last words of Jesus. I'll quickly hit this. Matthew 28. The last words of Jesus and his instruction are always about our next steps of action. His last words of instruction are about our next steps of action. And here's what he says. Some of the last words of Jesus to his followers. This is after the resurrection, which I love the verse right before it. It says, when they saw him, they worshiped him, but some doubted. Think about that. There's room for doubt even after the resurrection. And Jesus is standing there, and then he says these words to his people, to his followers then. Remember, he started a movement. He said, I'm going to start this movement, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And now I'm giving you marching orders. Here's what you're going to do. All authority in heaven and earth. How much authority? All authority in heaven and earth is given to me, Jesus says. All authority has been given to me. Therefore, what's it there for? And there's something coming for you to go do. Go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you, and surely I am with you always, even to the very end of the age. You go make disciples. What's a disciple? A disciple is an apprentice. It's a follower of Jesus. How do you do that? No? There's a lot of thoughts to that. Here's the simplest one I can come up with. How do you make a disciple? I think you live in such a way as a follower of Jesus that you let other people see what it looks like to be a follower of Jesus. You live as a follower of Jesus that you let other people see what it's like to be a follower of Jesus. And then they get to be invited. Our mission, inviting people into a life-giving, life-changing relationship with Jesus. It's just living in such a way that as a follower of Jesus, other people get to see you as a follower of Jesus and go, you know, that makes sense. I want that. And for them to begin to take steps and their next steps in that spiritual journey. And you do that one life at a time. As you came in, you were given a card. Says one life on it. Throughout history, the movement of Jesus always moves forward one life at a time. The movement of Jesus that he said he was going to be building, he said he would never stop and it would never be thwarted, it would never go out, it would stand up against hell itself and it would withstand it and keep moving. It's not 37,112 times, it's 37,112 times and counting on to millennial. It's just over and over and over he's building, and he always does that one life at a time. Friend, that is why you're sitting in this room. Because somewhere in the 14th, 15th, 16th century, someone moved this movement forward one life at a time. And then in the 18th century, and then the 19th century, and all throughout history, it's been moving forward one life at a time until somewhere it intersected your life. You're the one life. And you found out that Jesus actually knew your name, and that the creator of the heavens and the earth actually has a plan for your life, and that he created a way for you to have a relationship with him, not by your effort, not by how much energy you could put toward it, but simply because it's a gift. And he said, I have it here for you if you want it. The movement of Jesus always moves forward one life at a time. So here's my challenge to you this week. Who's the one life around you? Who's the one life around you? Where you're at, your schedule, your proximity, the paths of people that you cross in your normal part of life, who's the one life that Jesus is saying, this is who I want you to invest and let them see what a Jesus follower really is like? Who is it? And here's my invitation to you. Put this card in your wallet. Put it in your purse. Put it in your merce, or if you're a carry-all bag, whatever you got. Your European carry-all. Look how we get it. But I want you to think of a name, and I want you to write it. And I don't want you to ever show it to them. I want you to carry it away, and I want you to put it in your wallet and carry it with you, and I want you to keep it on your radar. God, here's the one life. If I'm part, you are the church, friends. And the church always moves the movement of Jesus forward one life at a time. Who's your one life? Some of you, I hear at times go, you know, I just don't know if the teaching's deep enough, and I just don't know if all this stuff, and I want to say to you, when's the last time you invited someone to church? Put that in your pipe and smoke it. I say that with tenderness, but friends, I say that with like a little bit of gusto, because the reality is that so many times we turn the church and this discipleship of following Jesus into about me. And the movement that Jesus started said, I will build my church and the gates of hell will not stand against it. And the movement of Jesus is always about the next life. Yes, it's about your life. Yes, God cares about you. Yes, he wants you to grow. Yes, we want to help you as a church do that. But that's not it. The church is never about you. Listen, the church is not about me. The church is about one life. Who's your one life? Do you hear me? Is this connecting? I need to know, because I'm passionate about this. It's about helping people see that life with God is available to them. It's that simple. It's life with God is available to them. And so who's that one life? And as we go back into a time of worship, I'm going to give you space. I really want you to do this. If you have a name already, I want you to write it down. I want you to put it in your wallet, put it in your purse, whatever. And I want you to think about it. And I want you to take time in this next bit as we kind of celebrate communion. And we do that every week around here. And we're going to have communion stations up front on both sides. And you're welcome to participate in that. We're going to have one song of worship. And then Brian's going to close us out. And during that time, I want you to think about something. Someone, somewhere along the way, had you as their one life. And God put it across their path to say, I'm going to pray for, I'm going to invest in, I'm going to care about, I'm going to focus on, and they focused on you. You were the one life. And now that's why you're here. And in this notion that Jesus said, his last words of instruction are about our next steps of action, and it's about go and make disciples. You will learn along the way, and we will help each other with that. But it is about going. It's church on the go. And guess what? Who the church is? You. You're the church. I'm the church. One life at a time. Live that out. Does that make sense? And I know tonight is just, man, but friends, I believe in this because I've seen it change my life, and I've seen it change friends' lives, and I've seen it change your life. And there is always a next life, the next one. Who is that one for you? And so, Father, I thank you for Sarah, and I thank you for the celebration of baptism we get to have here in just a little bit. And for her life, we celebrate her life. And Father, we celebrate the fact that somewhere along the way, people moved the church forward, and it wasn't a building. Thank you, Jesus, it wasn't a building. That is a movement. And that this movement is always moving forward one life at a time, and that someone actually financed and they cared about and they served and they gave and they got involved all throughout history so that we could become that one life. And we could find relationship with you and we could begin to have life with you, Jesus. Father, we want to be a part of a movement here in Tucson. A movement that goes beyond Tucson, that goes around the world, to reach people one life at a time. Because that's what you're passionate about. And God, we want to be a people that's passionate about the things that move your heart. And that's people. Always has been, always will be. That's what you build. You build people. And you build bridges to have a relationship with Him, and you build them steps that are secure and sure to move forward in their faith with you, to know you and to make you known. So would you make us a church like that? Father, I pray that you'd impress the one name upon our hearts tonight. And as we celebrate communion, as we worship you with song, would you allow your Spirit to stir our hearts to worship and to thank you for your generosity, for your giving. We love you. We love you.